I think you summed it up well. There are those who appreciate from the outside, and who so they have an aesthetic appreciation of the form, and then there are those who become it, or who allow it to inhabit them, and then it speaks through them. I mean, that's usually that defines the difference between singers often when they're approaching material. There are those who exist on the surface of a given art and who don't really, are unable to really plumb the depths. And then there are those who are just simply as though they're vessels, like seeing Betty Carter sing, for example, as I was able to do while she was still living, and catch her. It was as though the voice inhabited her, and she was a temporary caretaker for this phenomena that came up through her and would zap the audience. I mean, it was incredible to see this woman perform live. You know, unfortunately, she's no longer with us, and so the world is deprived of her presence. But this woman was an incredible performer. And yet, the rooms would be filled and packed. When she'd play L.A., the rooms would be virtually empty. But they would be filled for someone who didn't have a tenth of her gift, which is one of the tragedies of that kind of magic. It's a magic that is yet to really be appreciated in our society. You need those who do appreciate the form, though, even if they can't be it.
Right.
Because they're important too, and they do serve a role. And you need your fans. You need your Amiri Baraka is a wonderful soul, and I saw him read on the stage at Columbia University, and he had Philly Joe Jones with him and Archie Shepp, and this man wanted to be, he wanted to wail so bad. He was off, and he was gone, is the expression, you know, from the Beats.
A la Coltrane.
He was gone, absolutely. And he was so intense, so involved in the poem that he was reading, that he was moving closer to the stage and actually fell from the stage. And the audience, you know, the brother sitting in the front, which included my husband, saw him coming, you know, towards the edge of the stage. And as he fell, they all reached out their arms and caught him and lifted him back up onto the stage, which was a wonderful moment. But he, at that point, he was making his transcendence. He was moving off of the page, and he was blowing. This was his axe. And even if he was tone deaf, that was not going to stop him. So he created this marvelous moment, was created out of that intense desire to reach for transcendence and to transcend.
Which was the essence of Coltrane.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and jazz and poetry have that something in common. To me, they're so related, but not everybody gets that.
Well, to make the leap in a way that's not secular, or a way that's non...
linear?
To make that leap between the what's physical and on the page to the spiritual, whatever one perceives the spiritual realm to be, that seems to be something that man is constantly trying to do, whether we're talking about a rocket scientist or an astronomer, or whether we're talking about a financier, or whether we're, you know, there's the constant reach for the higher, that other dimension that gives our lives value. And so poets, of course, are not exempt often from wanting to reach that, although there are poets to whom this isn't of no value, that they're simply interested in here and now. But when that happens, and when that happens between you and the page, sometimes the mistake is to assume that you need some sort of substance to act as a bridge between you and it. And I think that's one of the values that jazz as a form has, although it too has been impacted by that kind of assumption, that here is a way to do it through excellence. You take care of your instrument, and it will take care of you.